Hi, my name is Stephanie Hinton, and you are listening to Passing Notes. For this first episode of Passing Notes, I interviewed Talena Norfar, who is a math teacher in Oklahoma City Public Schools, on how she implements project-based learning in her classroom.
Let's just start off with you introducing yourself and sharing a little bit about your educational experience.
Well, I am a teacher at Northwest Classen High School currently. I've been there basically for 7 years. I did spend 2 years at U.S. Grant helping with technology integration, but pretty much mostly of this last 7 years it was at Northwest Classen. And then before that, I was at Aztec Charter High School, where I taught math, Algebra 1, pre-algebra there as well. Oh, and geometry. I did teach geometry there.
So you are a math teacher. What main subjects are you teaching right now in this lesson?
So this upcoming year, I'm so excited because I only have 2 classes I'm teaching instead of 6. This coming up year to be Algebra 1 and Pre-Calculus, but I've taught everywhere from Algebra Enhancement, which is a support class, all the way to pre-calculus and anything you could think of in between, from an ELL support class to geometry that's co-taught, not co-taught, co-taught with a special ed teacher, inclusion where it is more of an ELL support. I mean, you name it, I have done it.
I knew you had a lot of experience, so it's good to hear what all that entails. So tell me how you became interested in project-based learning in your classroom.
Yeah, so this is so funny. I was not always a teacher. I started out in industry, and during a high school reunion, one of my colleagues really begged me to consider teaching, and so I did. And I ended up at Aztec Charter High School, which during their orientation, they were like, we do PBL. And this was 11 years ago when internet wasn't as robust and it wasn't as easily to get a hold of information. But they showed a video. And I was like, oh, that's very similar to the way I operated in industry. So that makes sense to do that now in education. And because I wasn't in education, I didn't know that that was not what everybody was doing. I thought this was the way everybody was teaching now. So as a journalist background, I just dove in to try and research and find out, and it was very little out at that time. But I just still jumped out there, and I was like, well, I'm going to try this, and fell in love with it from the reaction of my students, from the way I was able to just try to really help students see different perspectives. It was awesome, but I didn't know I was doing something that nobody was doing at the time.
Doing PBL before it was cool.
Yeah, authentic, making it a public product. And those pieces come together, and you think about all of those pieces and how to implement it in the classroom with them understanding that this is basically a product that we're going to create that helps us gain the learning, but also for an intended audience. And so once I've designed that, I think about my students, I think about those elements, and before school even starts, I get with parents to let them know that my class is a little different, that we don't do things traditionally. And after some years now, a lot of parents actually move their kids into my class rather than me really have to explain as much as I used to. But I tell my students, we're at different times when the unit was right to do a PBL. Hey, we're about to really go deep. We're about to help such and such, whichever the person may be or the situation may be. And we're going to do it by kind of wrestling with this question and going through a cycle. And so they love it and they hate it. Because it's really hard, but they love the fact that they are doing something for someone and that it's meaningful and that it's just not busy work that they get in class. But yeah, it stretches their brain and they're really, really tired a lot. So that part is hard.
So do you have a favorite lesson that you've done in previous years?
It's starting to get tight. I have a few that I really like. The finance project has been a number one contender now. I've done it for like 3 years, and it's where students help local families reduce their mortgage faster or get out of debt faster or save for their kids' college. It's basically an investments loan study through the lens of exponential and logarithmic equations. So I love that, but I used to have also a favorite that I did a lot with Algebra 1 students with the cell phone. Kids are not as excited about cell phones as they used to be, so that project is not what it used to carry. They're just sort of like, whatever. I keep switching my phone, so I don't really care about the plan. But I loved it for a long time because kids really were interested in trying to get the best deal and try and stretch their money. And so the cell phone project was analyzing different cell phones and educating the PTA of the school on how to pick the best cell phone plan. So that was, I love that one too.
Well, and what I hear you saying is you're using really hard, you know, difficult, I mean, some of the terms you were dropping I was not familiar with, math concepts to teach kids practical real-life skills that they're going to use as adults.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the math, I mean, I love, one of the things I love about PBL is you can do it at the elementary level, the middle school level.
Yeah.
All math can work with it. It's just a matter of trying to understand where is our math really housed in the real world,
mm-hmm.
and how can I match my background of just kind of knowing how to do the algorithms with what is really authentic in the real world. And
how do you assess learning through the PBL process? I hear that a lot from teachers, that they're concerned about assessments and putting in grades, and how do you make sure you know that the student has learned the content that they need to know?
Yeah, that is such a common concept. And I think some of it is because of a misconception on the way PBL works. People oftentimes think of PBL as projects, and I kind of use projects in a different word as PBL. Projects is what most of us experience, where we just go home, we learn, then we do something hands-on, usually with parents or by yourself if you're stuck, or a whole different cousin does it for you, but you do it separate from the learning. And a lot of teachers think that's still PBL, that they may give them class time now instead of having them do it at home, but they still do the learning, and then the project separate. So that's one thing you got to kind of switch your head around, because then the assessment looks very different when you're having the PBL go alongside the learning. So, and another piece of it is, so once you get that switch, then you also need to switch to really valuing formative over summative. So PBL is very like minute by minute check-ins with your students and helping them through what they inform you more than what you're informing them. So that piece is then the next switch you have to make, which once you do that, then you realize, well, I don't really have to grade as much if I'm constantly checking in and I'm constantly moving kids forward. It doesn't make any sense for me to constantly put in this number when it's moving. I just need to help them move as much as possible, and then I can put the number in. Because the number should really reflect what they know overall, not what they knew at this only time. And so then you'll move into, well, I don't really have to grade everything. I just need to grade things once I really have moved them as far as they can go. And so it's this whole evolution that happens when you start to take this journey. I found out that I would probably not be the teacher I am if it had not been for PBL, because you have to get better and better at teaching to do PBL well, rather than you can just get better at teaching by yourself and then PBL could find you and then you're just blossom. But PBL forces you to get better and better. So I spent like 6 years of the last 11 studying an assessment. I spent 5 years studying collaboration. I mean, I'm just like, just insane on getting better and better at helping my students. But those are the biggest switches. And once you do that, then you can come to your own sort of philosophy or follow your school's guideline as far as how the grades get put in. But at this moment in time, to meet my district's requirement, but also give my students a fair chance, I do typically a 2-for-1 cycle. Students know in and out of PBL, they get at least 2 days, sometimes 3 if the concept is hard, to wrestle with the understanding. And we're constantly going back and forth talking and helping them see with a rubric how they're doing. And then on the day 1 or 2, after the 2 days or 3 days, then it's an assessment day. It may be just a classwork assessment grade in the grade book, or it might be a formal test grade in the grade book. But they get a sort of a light. But if they move by the time we finish the unit or by the time we finish the PBL, if that grade is better than all previous grades, it gets replaced. So let's say, you know, week one, I'm sucking. I only made a 70, but I keep moving. I keep moving. It's next week. I get up to an 80. When she takes the assessment, by the time this whole thing is done, the PBL or the grading of the unit in and of itself, and I made a 90, then everything is a 90, rather than the 60 and the 70 and the 80 getting milled together.
Because it's more about mastery of the content.
Completely.
I like that a lot. Something else I heard you say is that, I mean, you really need to know your content well to be able to effectively deliver a PBL lesson with your classrooms.
Hugely. And it's okay. I mean, I tell teachers a lot, you know, it will help you to know your content even more when you go ahead and try it. I say step out with a content area that just normally, with what you do normally, takes 2 to 3 weeks to complete. Mm-hmm. So whatever that is, even though you may not really know it as deeply as you will by the time you start trying to create a PBL around it, start there and you'll start seeing your content. You'll start seeing how limited it is and that you want more to it. Mm-hmm. Because PBL does require them to understand things as well as have the content knowledge. And sometimes certain content pieces don't require understanding. So you get the opportunity to say, oh, well, this is what I would really want them to understand about this. Mm-hmm. And so you get to add that element to it, and that further deepens you with understanding what it is.
It allows you to grow with your students in the process.
Completely.
So I want to kind of go back to something you said earlier about your finance lesson with helping families. So you involve the community a lot in your PBL. Talk to us a little bit about how you identify people in the community to get involved and more about the role that they play with working with your students.
Yeah. So, yeah, the huge piece, the element, the public product, public being the biggest part, that it has to be during the entire process that students are involved with people outside of the classroom, and even preferably the school at times. And so during my duration of kind of understanding PBL over 11 years, I've had different tactics of getting community members. When I was at Aztec, we had a monthly newsletter that went out. And so when I had one coming up, I would elicit the parents and the people who would read the newsletter. Hey, do you know an architect? Do you know an engineer? Do you know any of these people? I have cold called. I've just gone in the yellow pages and I've just said, hey, I'm looking for some people who are experts in this. Would you mind coming in? Here recently, because Northwest Classen has such a huge alumni, I posted on our Facebook page and our alumni group. I was like, hey, I'm looking for some people who are financial planners. And I had like 10 responses of people's brothers, cousins, whatever. I've used family members and just had them pretend to be people because the kids don't know. And they're just adults that can be, you know, that have some sort of background with it or can fake it. I've talked to people on planes, in Google chats and Twitter, and connected at different conferences. I've connected with people. I've called colleges for professors for help. So it gets, I mean, if you're an introverted person as a teacher and you're sort of like, oh my God, call somebody. You don't have to do that part. You can put it in your newsletter or you can post it on Facebook and just let your community there help you. You can start with your family members. I tell people all the time, you'd be surprised how many people can get off work to come to school. It's often a piece of their job. So don't think that you're taken away from someone when you ask them to do that for you. So you have that end if you're kind of introverted. If you're like me and you'll talk to anybody, you can go all the way to the cold calling, but it really is easier than it seems to get community. And it actually helps you stay accountable to doing the PBL. If you keep it in your school, or if you keep it as you as the audience, you're more likely to be like, we can just stop this. Mm-hmm. Or you can be easier to say, well, this is good enough. Mm-hmm. But when you make it really out there, you keep wanting to push the kids, and the kids keep wanting to push themselves, because it's not good enough now that if I just got a little bit wrong, or you know, this looks kind of just slightly okay. No, it has to look really good, and they keep wanting to work at it. So it's worth it to get, even if it's only one or two people outside of your classroom, to do it with you.
So talk to me a little bit about the different roles that a community member might play in the PBL setup.
So they have sometimes been the actual recipient. They were the people who needed the problem to be fixed. Mm-hmm. They have been experts where they have some sort of area and they could come in and teach.
Okay.
Or they can come in and look at students' work and give them feedback on it. They've come in and just offered assistance. With 101, just general quick kids were curious and wanted to know more.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of different facets that they can.
It probably depends on the PBL you're working with. That makes sense. Well, it's good to go over it, though, because then that gives a lot of ideas to teachers who might want to bring community in on their PBL.
Yeah, I would caution that. I think about it. If they come in and they're teaching something, you definitely want to give them a lot of guidance of what it is they're doing, and try to limit how much time, because the kids won't be able to pay attention that long. And they're not savvy with how to really help them learn that way. So if they're teaching, definitely give them very like no more than 10 or 15 minutes of this is all they got to say and do. If they're going to give kids feedback, try to give them like a checklist or some sort of tool to use so that they can be better at the language of how to help the kids get better. If professors and people outside of the school is usually a better resource for things like that, if you don't feel like you have the time or feeling a little like weird on being able to help them direct that, then you could stick to people inside of education that can come in, but just not in the building.
Right, because they have that background knowledge of what to expect out of a ninth grade math student. So what other advice would you give to teachers looking to implement PBL? I know you've already given a lot of really good nuggets, but what some good advice?
You know, BIE.org is probably the best resource. And I'm always looking for others, and there are people coming out, but you will find most of the time they're using BIE's information somehow on their site. So as one person told me before, might as well go to the real source. Why go through a second person? So BIE.org is a great place to go and help you start to get resources, see what the elements are. The next thing that I usually advise teachers is to purchase a couple of books that are really good. If you are secondary, BIE does have a great secondary PBL one. And if you're elementary, they have a great elementary one. But there also is a couple of other books that have come out recently from some friends of mine. One is Authenticity in PBL by Dana Lauer. That's a really good one as far as how to kind of really put the realness in PBL. And then inquiry is often a really hard thing for teachers. And so there was another one that she did with another person named Jill Akers on bringing curiosity into the classroom was the second one they wrote. And that's more for elementary. And how do you truly get kids' curiosity to drive their learning? They speak to PBL too, but it's kind of like in the midst of the curiosity part, which is a really, really, I think, tough element for most teachers to wrap their brain around. So those are some great, great resources to read to help you with that.
Great. Oh, and one last question. How many times a year do you do a PBL?
That is such a common question.
I should have asked that one earlier, but
it's a good one to end, because everyone is always like, "What?" And that's the one thing they will remember. So it really depends on your content. I just depending on whether I'm teaching Algebra 1 or Geometry or algebra 2 or pre-calculus, the number changes. So rather than say a number, I say, okay, you do it based upon what content normally takes 2 to 3 weeks. If it takes 2 to 3 weeks, then there's your PBL. Now, if you are the only teacher where they're experiencing this, then still give your kids like a couple, like if you teaching units and everything takes 2 to 3 weeks, then give them a little bit of a break because it's very intense work. And so to do that in your class all the time, you might kill them. But it's not as bad if they're doing it in other, if they're, every school, like some schools are PBL focused. And so it's okay when a teacher doesn't do it because they're experiencing it in another class. So they get a break throughout the day and it's not intense of a day, even though they're in a PBL school. But just start with what normally takes 2 to 3 weeks. And that means at the secondary level, you see them an hour a day. If you're at the elementary level, look at it more inside of your subject. What usually takes 2 to 3 weeks in one subject area, in English or in social studies or in science. Definitely if you're in elementary and you only teach like social studies twice a week, or you only teach science twice a week, if it's very limited, don't try and do a PBL on that because you will, they won't remember well because you're only revisiting it twice a week. It's better to do it where you will meet with them or basically engage in the content and the study every day.
Okay.
That would be helpful. If you're a teacher who where you, like I know elementary electives or elementary specials, depending on the school, they change the name. But but those often only see them once a week or twice a week at most. And so I always recommend to them to, you can do what I call PBL Lite, where you do some of the 8 elements, but not all of them, since, again, you don't get them to see them that often. Or you piggy on with another classroom, and you guys do it together. Like, I loved one project. It was called the Snake Project out of the Conservatory Boston School, where it is featured in a book called Transformational Literacy. And so she teamed up with the music and the art classes, and they wrote an audio book about snakes. And the kids wrote their own music to play with the audiobook, and they drew their own snake inside of the audiobook. And so she, as a teacher, was the main house of the writing, and she did have them do a lot of the drawing, but the in the class, but also with the art person. And then the music person, when they were in their electives, they were writing the music for their song. So that's another great way to collaborate and create a great BBL.
I bet kids that experience those types of lessons, don't forget them.
No.
I bet you have lots of former students that share stories from your PBL.
They do. Lessons. They really, really do. And sometimes now that I'm friends with some of them on Facebook, they remind me of that when they wish me happy birthday or they start thinking about me. So, Yeah, it is very, very impactful.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I don't have any more questions for you, but before we stop the recording, tell how people can find you if they have any other questions that I didn't think of.
Oh, so so you definitely can, if you're a Twitter person, you can follow me on Twitter or actually any social media. I keep it the same. I'm T.H. Norfar. Talena Heitch Norfar is where it came from. So N-O-R-F-A-R, that's the whether it's Instagram, I think even Snapchat, but I'm really not on Snapchat. Facebook, you can, all of those places are really, really easy for you to get me. But then, formal ways, you can email me at thnorfar@okcps.org. And then, lastly, over the summer, I'm even putting more out there, about my PBL. I have a website that I blog, occasionally. It's rare, because I just cannot get the time together. But you can definitely, like, search through my old blog post to understand PBL. And it's pbl-birdside.blogspot.com. It came from the idea of I wish I was a bird and could sit on a teacher's shoulder and kind of watch. So the premise is you're watching me on my shoulder doing PBL. So you're bird side with me.
I like it. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for letting me interview you. I feel like you gave lots of really good starting points for a teacher who wants to get a little bit further into PBL. So thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to.
Graphic design was done by Jordan Koff. You can find and view his work on Facebook or at www.jordankoff.com. Thank you for listening to Passing Notes. Please share your thoughts, questions, and suggestions with me on Twitter at TheStephHinton or on the blog, Passing Notes with Stephanie Koff.